Welcome back to the Literacy Lunch Break. In this episode, we continue to explore life beyond guided reading. Join us as Jamie Peebler, instructor in Reading Science Program at Mount St. Joseph University, shares her insights on how to maximize small group targeted instruction. To kick things off, Jamie, could you share with our listeners a bit about your background and your journey in the field of education and what led you to specialize in the Reading Science Program at Mount St. Joseph University?
Well, like many of your listeners, I started my career as a classroom teacher. I was a teacher who, in undergraduate work, was trained in very whole language, balanced literacy methodologies and philosophies. So I started off in Indianapolis Public Schools as a primary teacher. Pretty quickly, I realized that the skills that I had were not meeting my students' needs. And interestingly enough, some of my colleagues were having better outcomes with their students than I was having. And it just really started to get me to question. So I stumbled onto my first Orton-Gillingham course accidentally in 2003. And that's really where my journey began. I also had the benefit of working with students that were not so quiet about the fact that I did not know how to teach them how to read. They vocalized that, and that was a very humbling experience, of course. So then after that first Orton-Gillingham course, I was starting to see improvements with my students, but I really lacked any clear direction on language comprehension. And that's what brought me to reading science, which was there has to be more. If we can be this explicit with word recognition, surely we can be this explicit with language comprehension. And from there, I found my way to Mount St. Joseph.
Yes. And I think, you know, as you said, so many listeners can relate to that, right? And I always say the same thing. I've started my first year teaching and I'm like, oh my goodness, I do not know how to support the students that I have. I think it's interesting that you had students that were able to vocalize that need as well. And again, as we think about literacy, we talk a lot about those foundational skills and though we know how critical they are, but I love that you have expanded that into, you know, really comprehension and how can we be explicit with that as well. And so that really moves us into that small group conversation, because as we think about, you know, small group, so many of us in that balanced literacy world, I don't think I've ever spoken to an educator that hasn't experienced, you know, balanced literacy or small group instruction or guided reading. And when we think about guided reading and the way that's typically structured is, you know, the format really is the same, right? You know, we're pulling small groups, but that format really looks the same. Maybe it's a different book, but we're doing the same thing for all of our students. We're really not looking at what their specific needs is. And that's truly the benefit of small group, is to target their specific needs. So, you know, I was listening to one of your webinars and it was just so, you know, refreshing to hear just how we can revisit and think about some things that, you know, when we have been teaching in such a world with the same thing over and over again, sometimes we don't even think about or consider some of these other needs. So would you mind just sharing some considerations as we think about making that shift from guided reading to really rethinking what small group can look like? As far as, you know, there's many things we can rethink, but maybe even just starting with some of the skills, some of the needs, some of the things we can target or focus for our learners.
Yeah, I think what you said initially around we basically were doing the same thing with a different book is really the revelation that came to me of this doesn't quite make sense. I'm struggling to get everything done that I need to get done. I've had to make decisions about, you know, cutting written expression from my daily instruction. I'm not hitting spelling. Handwriting is going downhill. All these things were all kind of landing on my plate at one time. And the one common variable was, well, I increased my small group block. And when I increased my small group block, my direct instruction, you know, really was reduced to, you know, trading things off. So it got me to thinking around, do I really need to do all of these things every day in a small group setting? Is there any common denominator that all kids could actually have in a whole group setting? And that fortunately intersected with the reading science knowledge I was getting. So when I was in that mindset, I realized, so there's a lot of information around word recognition in terms of that being essential for hitting it at the level that students need. Obviously, if you don't have prerequisite skills like sound symbol correspondences for consonants, then you're not going to be able to blend a lot of words. Right. So there are, you know, some constraints that limit word recognition, but language comprehension, could be very broad and global, and perhaps I could lift that out of my small group and make that whole group. So that really started me with the structure first of what's my core going to look like where all kids have a similar need. And if I was willing to take some things out of my small group and put them in whole group, then I could really reserve that small group time for something that was truly different, because it doesn't make sense to do the same thing four different times with four different groups.
Yes. And I think that's so powerful and something we need to, you know, say over and over and over again, because for so long it was everything needs to be differentiated. You know, I was a former administrator, and when we walked into a classroom, if something was happening a whole group, oh my goodness, like, why is that whole group? Really, when we stop and think about it, that's where the power is at, right? If we're doing small group all day, we're leaving our students on their own for the majority of the day, and there's not a lot that's happening. And so why teach the same thing over and over in small group when we can teach whole group, provide everybody with the skills we know they all need, and as you said, really then use that small group for targeted needs. And as we think about that, so what that looks like, right? Like, I love the way you talked about, you know, yes, with those foundational skills, if you don't have those prerequisites, we need to teach that. And that is maybe something just a handful of students need, where that comprehension is more global and we can teach that whole group. I love in our pre-call, you had talked about some of those possibilities for small group. And oftentimes we do. We think of those foundational skills of, you know, phonemic awareness, phonics. Let's look at our scope and sequence. What skills do they still need? But there are so many other layers that go into that. And as we start to think about small group, we can definitely focus on phonemic awareness and phonics needs, but there's some other considerations. I would love for you to share about some other possibilities for small group as well.
Right. Well, so back to, again, another point that you made around what we were covering in a guided reading lesson. We were doing our word work and our comprehension and our, sometimes there was even a writing in response to what we read. But when we think about all of those skills, it's important for us to make sure, do we have data that actually is telling us how students are performing in those skills? Because really, our small groups should be driven by data. And data can be formal, but it can also be informal observations that the teacher is collecting. So once I have some guidance on what my students need, that really drives what the small group looks like. So an example, working with a group of students reading a comprehension passage out loud, I discovered that it was their inability to connect a pronoun to its antecedent that prevented them from understanding the passage. So for that group of students, our small group lesson was revisiting, here's some sentences where the author has used a pronoun. Let's go back a couple of sentences and see if we can figure out what the word is that pronoun replaced. And by doing that out loud with them a couple of minutes each day across a week, then they were able to do it more independently. So it could be as simple as that. I may actually have a group of students that in written expression are having a difficult time because they don't understand the subject-verb agreement piece of what they're trying to write. That would be the focus of my small group. I may again have a group of students that are not quite at that phoneme segmentation level their peers are at, but we can at least segment at the syllable level. So I might be working with them there. So it's just a matter of, again, what data do I have that's telling me this is the thing that's preventing this student or group of students from reaching the same level of success that their peers are reaching.
Yes. And that's a huge topic as we think about that, right? Assessment, that data. And as we think about the different types of assessment, as you said, it could be formal, it can be informal. And oftentimes when we're targeting those examples you gave, that's really you as a teacher observing what your students are doing and being able to provide, you know, that quick targeted instruction. And so a couple of questions come to mind as I was listening to you speak is, assessment. There may be some educators listening and going, oh my goodness, I don't even know if I would know that it was the subject-verb agreement that my students, you know, needed support with. How would I know that? And oftentimes, you know, universal screeners, they serve a purpose. They're that nice general idea of how our students are doing. But as we plan small group instruction, you know, and we think about universal screeners, I know oftentimes, and again, I think about my time as, you know, a reading specialist or a literacy coach where we would just look at the colors and we'd be like, okay, you know, this student is yellow. We need to do this. What we really know is that that's not how to best plan small group, right? So do you mind just kind of digging into that a little bit as like, as we think about universal screeners, what purpose that really serves versus the other types of assessment and how that can really drive our instruction?
You're right. And our universal screeners are our first step for sure. But some universal screeners provide you an opportunity to actually look at the form and what the student said and responded and what their error patterns are. And if that does give you insight, that's a great, you know, tool to use. But oftentimes that's not where we get that granular information we need about students. So sometimes it may require providing an informal diagnostic like a phonic screener. Sometimes it's just sitting and talking to the child about, tell me why you came up with that answer, and they could explain themselves, or they can't explain. And so that also gives you a little insight. But most of that data that I gather on what my students need is really the in-the-moment teaching based on their responses. Sometimes it's, you know, checking their written work and their student artifacts, but often there isn't just one assessment tool that tells me everything I need. So your formative assessments, your teacher-created assessments, again, student work, exit tickets, listening to them in the comprehension block, really is where I feel like the most beneficial data comes from.
Yes. And I think that's so important to give power back to looking at what your students are actually doing again and thinking about the different lenses, right? We're looking at our students through different lenses, and that really can drive our instruction. Now, as I said, a couple of questions came to mind as I was listening to you. So the assessment is one big piece. And then the time, right? So as we think about that and listening to the different targets we can have for small group, again, putting back, you know, to my literacy coach days and my reading specialist days, where it would be like every 4 to 6 weeks, we are changing groups. Everybody has 20 minutes or 25 minutes or 30 minutes, however that may look for our small group instruction. And so sometimes we're, you know, putting students in this group, you know, and you're there for 4 to 6 weeks. As we start to think about how we can rethink what targeted small group instruction looks like, does that always have to look like that?
I don't think it does. Yeah. So one of the models that works well for me is to make those groups as flexible and fluid as I possibly can. Usually at the most, I plan a week out, because if your instruction is effective, you might see progress more quickly than a 4 to 6 week window. And when you do plan 4 to 6 weeks out, it just doesn't give you that ability to react to what's happening in the moment. So typically what I do is I plan a week, and that week looks like, okay, so I have a handwriting intervention group because they are just struggling with some certain formation, and it's a 2 or 3 minute group, and I'm pulling them over, and I might have a plan for what I think we're going to work on that week, but I have to be willing to pivot if they pick it up more quickly or if they don't pick it up as quickly as I thought. Then after I work with my handwriting group, I may pull my phonemic awareness group over. That's again working on segmentation at the level that they're at. And I might plan that week for, we're going to segment just syllables. But after 2 or 3 days, they're ready to segment 2 phonemes, yeah, with a long vowel. So I'm going to, again, be ready to pivot. So when I write out my plan, I write where we are and where I want us to go, so that I at least am prepared throughout the week to move to that next step if we get there sooner. No harm done if we don't get there. It just means next week is pre-planned. Yes. But I have to be willing to adjust. I don't want to lock myself into a structure that actually ends up holding kids back because it's slower than what they were able to do.
I love that. I love that you're not just planning for the week, but you're planning for where you want to be. I think that is, I can imagine many educators listening to this and going, oh my goodness, that is just a thoughtful thing, as sometimes we are. We're just trying to get through the week. We're trying to get through the day. And we kind of know where we're going, but to really kind of put that down and know that I can, that allows us to adjust, as you said. And then the timing, right? As you said, you might be pulling them for 2 minutes, 5 minutes. It doesn't need to be this 20 to 30 minute, every small group is, you know, coming to me for that amount of time. So in a day, what, you know, when you think about the time spent for small group instruction, typically in your classroom or in a classroom, what would be the ideal amount of time that we would be spending? And again, depending on need, of course, we want that range, but ideally, what time frame for a classroom for small group instruction?
For me, the entire block is usually about 30 minutes, and each rotation or each, you know, focus lesson that I have is 5 to 7 minutes. So I can potentially meet with four or five different groups, depending on what the skill target is. But in that time, what might happen is I might pull that handwriting group over and it has six kids in that group. Maybe it has eight. So that's another thing to come back to is there a magic number? But I pull them over, we get through our lesson, I send them back to their seats. And two of those kids are actually going to be in my next intervention group. Because in addition to needing handwriting, they also had a phonemic awareness need. So they're going to stay there. I'm going to pull over my next group of kids. We're going to work for, again, about 5 to 7 minutes on that phonemic awareness task. Because I don't need to do any word work warm up. We don't have a book to read out loud. We don't have any comprehension work. They're there because they have a phonemic awareness need. And then I send them back to their seats. I call my next group over. And actually one or two of those kiddos are joining for the second group. And the second group, again, might be a comprehension focus. And this might be the group that is having a hard time using pronouns correctly. And so it's an oral language group. So again, each focus has a very limited amount of time because that's the only thing that we're working on. Yes. And it also allows students to be a part of multiple groups depending on their data, which what's interesting when you use that format, you end up with groupings of kids that you may not have never anticipated putting together. Because when we used one assessment data point, it really combined variables and it didn't tease out the fact that they were really high in one skill and not so high in another. But when we tease out specific skills, we are able to really intentionally put kids together that have the same need. So I might not see a student during the week. I might see a student three times during the week. But whenever I pull a group, it's for a very short period of time. And those groups are always fluid.
Yes. And I think that is probably one of the biggest shifts as we think about, you know, shifting from that guided reading world to more targeted small group instruction is, yes, there is not, you know, oh, you were just in this group and that's it. And then I'll see you, you know, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, is that we really can start to think about those very specific needs and have students, as you said, multiple times or, you know, maybe not. I think that's so powerful. And as we think about that, really making that shift to this small group isn't taking up most of our time because we know, as you said, anything we can do, whole group, if we're doing it for everyone, we should be doing that whole group. Now, there are about 30 minutes then in the day where some students are working independently. As you said, you know, you may not see some of those students. Probably the most common question as we think about small group, and this has been a common question, I mean, for as long as I can remember in education is, so what are my students doing if they're not in a group with me? How can we make best use of that time? So I know in our pre-call, we had talked about this, and I think you said something that was really important is anything that we're doing in that time is not something where it's not a new concept, right? It's that opportunity for practice of a concept that has already been taught. Would love for you to share some of your thoughts around what other students can be doing as you are working with that small group.
Right. Good. So yes, you don't want students going off and working on something they're not yet solid on because you risk them making errors, and errors really undo good learning. It confuses students. So what they should be doing when they're working independently is maintaining skills that they have already learned. So part of what causes students to fall behind isn't that they didn't understand something in the first place, it's that they didn't retain it. Mm-hmm. So the value of that independent time is really skill maintenance and retention. So you can give them things that they're already accurate with, maybe even already automatic. It's now applying it and generalizing that skill. The other thing is just giving them time to finish up tasks that they couldn't finish during the block. So one of the, I know, challenges that we have as teachers, we teach something and then we have to give up class time for them to finish it for the you do part. And, you know, and then all learning stops so that they can practice. So one of the things that I've tried doing is we do the I do and the we do of a skill. And if I'm sure that they're accurate enough to do it on their own or with a partner, I let them finish that during the small group time while I'm pulling students. And that child that might be a little more fragile with that skill will be partnered with someone who might be a support to them. So I would always err on the side of allowing students to work in partnerships or groups in that instance. And then also it allows students who maybe didn't finish a task, maybe it was a morning work activity, maybe there was a paragraph that they were writing. So they have this work folder that one option in small group time is to always return to that work folder and just finish something. Yeah. We just don't have time in the day for them to finish things.
Yes.
And so, you know, instead of creating centers that they would rotate to, which is costing us a lot of time and resources.
Yes.
It's an authentic time to do the work that they already have assigned.
And I just love that because it's not about keeping them busy then, right? It's really about, as you said, the importance of maintaining a skill and giving them that practice that we know they need. So it's really a win-win. We're targeting our students' specific needs, really meeting them where they're at. While when they are working independently, it's the practice that we know is critical to making the learning stick. Jamie, I cannot thank you enough for joining us and being a guest on our podcast. I could listen to you for hours and hours on end, but I am so appreciative that our listeners get to listen to you, to learn from you. In our show notes, we will share how they can listen to your webinars and learn more from you as well. But thank you so much for being a guest on our podcast today.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Be sure to subscribe and stay tuned for our upcoming episodes where we explore literacy topics in a snack-sized, easily digestible format.